Hello, everyone, and welcome to another preview show here on the Cycling Dane Extra channel, or if you're listening on the Cycling Dane podcast, available on Spotify. And today we're looking through Amstel Gold Race, that's the full name, 2024. And as always, I'm joined by Patrick Blake of Audu Cycling and one third of the Echelon Cycling podcast. And I mean, Patrick, Amstel Gold, very close in recent years, in many recent years, apart from last year. But yeah, Amstel Gold, how does it sit for you as a race?
If any race is actually to be a sixth monument, it's this one. I'm just saying it. People always talk about Stardebut. I think people don't appreciate Amstel Gold enough. I think it's a really great race, and it's sort of overlooked. It might be one which people don't bother watching and just kind of looking for results or the highlights. But I think that it's a really great race. It's, like you say, it's produced some great additions. Van der Poel 2019. But like I say, it produced some really close and some quite surprise winners, like when Kwiatkowski and Kuznetsov were going neck and neck to the line. That was kind of like Kwiatkowski just out of nowhere. The kind of Pidcock and Wout van Aert on the line, nobody still really knows which way it really went. Yeah, last year was probably more of a absolute certainty because Pogacar just rode up into the distance. But it was really the big announcement of Ben Healy onto the scene as well. So I think it's a really important race to be watching because it gives a really good indication, I think, going into Liège, who's going to be a competitor, especially since this year we've got some injuries to some major riders. It's going to be important to see who are going to be the big contenders going into Liège in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I don't know how you feel about Tadej Pogačar. There was also like him drafting a car a bit dodgy, but that wasn't his fault. That was the commissaire being a bit too close. Obviously, he won both Amstel and Flesh, and yeah, unfortunately, couldn't complete the triple because he trashed and broke the wrist. But nevertheless, Patrick, what does the route look like for the riders this year?
Well, it's pretty standard Amstel Gold route. It's 253.6 kilometers. The last climb that the riders will face is the Bemleberg, which is at 7 kilometers to go. But we also taken 33 climbs throughout the whole day, so it's very thick and fast, including the Lohberg, the Kauberg, the Guhelmerberg, the Bemleberg, and then also within the space of 12 kilometers inside the last 55 kilometers of the race, there's the Guplemerberg, there's the Kreisberg, the Eisenbossenberg, and the Fromberg. So also there's Tadej Pogačar's famous launch pad, which is the Kauberg. That's the 22% section where he just rode off into the distance last year. So it's a really thick and fast attritional race, very suited towards the punchers, and I think that it's going to be a really interesting addition. Of course, we do have some previous winners on the start list. Pogačar isn't here, rather interestingly, but I think that there is obviously one big favorite above them all. But yeah, it's going to be a really hard race, 250 odd kilometers. It's going to be nearing, well, it's going to be over 5 hours of racing. So that's why I do think that it is sort of like a sixth monument in a way, because it is a very long race, and I think it's going to be really tough.
Well, yeah, we might as well get into the favorites. Mathieu van der Poel, the king himself, he's on a hat-trick right now, winning the Tour of Flanders, winning Paris-Roubaix, doing it as a world champion. I've said this like five times now, but he's the first rider to do that since 1962. If you were to do the Tour of Flanders, Paris-Roubaix, and Amstel Gold, I don't even know who's actually done that. Fabian Cancellara, Tom Boonen obviously didn't do that.
Oh, yeah. He has been talking recently in the papers about... Hasn't he? He's been kind of saying, I've done everything Van der Poel's done. Well, maybe Van der Poel could go one better. Maybe he could also add Amstel Gold in the space of 1 year. That would be an insane record, like you say, just winning so frequently.
Boone has appeared on this channel. Very nice guy. He was probably taken out of context. I think that's what happened. They love to take riders out of context. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Patrick, Mathieu, so supreme in both those races. Supreme in E3 as well. He's won it in the past as well. Last time he was here was in 2022, finished fourth. Is he going to win it here? How is he going to win it? He is a bit musclier, so I don't know. Does that play a factor into these rolling bergs?
I don't think so. I think the efforts are probably only a few minutes maximum, so I think that this is still very much in Van der Poel range, and he's got a very strong team here as well, including Jasper Philipsen, who, of course, winner of Milano San Remo, I think they're maybe going to try and keep him within the race to keep him as an option in the finale. This is going to be quite a tall order. I think this is definitely on the limit of Philipson's abilities, but I think that he has taken a step up, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's there. They've got the under-23 world champion, Axel Lorenz, is coming here. Søren Klaus Andersen, Quentin Hermans, who recently won a stage at Itulia Basque Country, Michal Gogol, and Stan Van Tlick. So it's a really strong team, and it could very well be the strongest team in the race. I think maybe UAE Team Emirates might have something to say about that, but they do have a big favourite in Mathieu van der Poel. He is the bookies' favourite at the moment, and I think it's very understandable why. He's won this race in the past, so I think that on this current form, it's going to be all eyes on van der Poel. The main question is, how do you beat him? And do you have to just attack really early and try and get him separated from his team? Maybe, but I think he is going to be a hard man to beat, that's for sure.
Well, the race is one of the youngest races, and I mean, you are saying it should be a monument, and many people would be like, no, it's not old enough. But in that, the same people probably say also that they think Strada should, so logic doesn't really prevail. But nevertheless, Tour of Flanders, Paris-Roubaix, Amstel Gold has never been done in the same season. We have confirmed it, and that means it has never been done before as a world champion either. So if he does win, it'll be absolutely hablamo. But that aside, Patrick, the team was such... Yeah, you spoke about the team being so strong, and they've been so instrumental in his Ronde win and his Roubaix win. Is the team strong enough here to mark moves and send people up the road? I know you said Hermans is on good form, but well, I mean, Hermans, third in, or second even, in Liège a few years ago.
I think it is good enough. I'm not sure about Philipson, whether he'll just be like a reserve option, but I do think that Hermans and Lawrence provide some good options to try and mark moves, and then Van der Poel, I expect, to launch just a killer blow within the last hour and just see who can go with him. And I would be quite surprised if somebody can go with him, considering the form that he's on and the people that he's dropped so far in all the monuments and the races he's done so far this year. But I think it is a strong enough team. And I think that, you know, would they be happy enough if Laurence or Hermans is up the road with somebody? I'm not sure. I think this is more of like a going up, not all in, but largely in for a Van der Poel victory, because he is almost like a very safe option to be going with in terms of executing either a solo victory or a small kind of reduced sprint victory.
Yeah, I agree. But we might as well turn to another team that are looking to try and beat Mr. Van der Poel, and that is UAE Team Emirates, obviously winning with Tarek Gacha, coming here with, it looks like, João Almeida and a final Yuzo. Yeah, Patrick, the pedigree of these two in a one-day setting, I must admit, I'm not too familiar with either of them doing quite well that well. We had Juan Ayuso doing quite well early on this year in the French Drôme Classic and for Ardèche. So, yeah, how do you see UAE working? They've been quite strong, like Tour of Flanders, what was it, 3-4-5? That was quite impressive. So they've had a good classics campaign.
The problem with these guys comes in that their experience in the Ardennes classics, they have proven to be good in other one-day races, but I think that these races just are a little bit different. They're a different kettle of fish to, you know, Spanish one-day races and other kind of smaller, you know, dot pro races. This is a world tour level event, and I'm not saying that means that Almeida or Ayuso is going to be doing bad. I think that they're very capable of, you know, pulling a result out, but also they've got Kobe Hershey's, Shud Bax, and Brandon McNulty here. So they've got some massive strength and depth. I think their plan's going to be need to kind of have a really aggressive race, open it up nice and early, try and make the climbs as hard as possible, because at the end of the day, this is a team more with kind of like climbers rather than punchers, I'd say. But I do think that they've got a lot of options here. I'm not sure who their main man would be, to be honest. Maybe it would be Ayuso, but considering that he has won Basque Country recently, it's hard to say, but I think that it's a really strong team with lots of options. And I think that it's pretty capable of countering Alpecin, I think. It's going to be kind of secondary leaders pinging up the road all the time. Everyone trying to beat Mathieu van der Poel.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting team on that sense. I completely agree, but I don't know, it just feels almost like a body without a head.
think that's a good way of putting it.
But Mark Kishi, we were all kind of, you always say that, are we going to get 2020 Mark Kishi back? And 2020 Mark Kishi won Flesh for Loan. So I know we don't have the best finish up the Kalberg anymore, but still, when he's on form, he certainly packs a punch. And Brendan McNulty can't really second guess him. He's kind of on or off.
Yeah, I think McNulty's more the launching it from distance guy to try and TT solo away. I see Almeida actually being a bit like that as well, and Hershey and Ayuso being more of the kind of finishers from a small group. So I think both of them have a decent turn of speed. So that might be their battle plan. But are they fast enough to defeat Vanderpool in a sprint? I wouldn't say so.
They would try and 1-2 him or whatever and throw up the road.
Yeah, I think they have to.
Nonetheless, we might as well move on to another team. And I'm going to go for Lidl Trek because they've been quite interesting this year with Mats Pettersson primarily. But you were talking about the Tour of Basque Country on that final day. The man that he took the jersey away was Mathias Skillemose Jensen, who last year managed to finish 8th in the race, 2nd in Flesh for Loan, and top 10 in Liège. Seems to be on pretty good form. Took a stage in Paris-Nice as well. Lidl Trek, also with the experience of Bauke Mollema here. Are we to look towards these guys again? And, I mean, we've been raving about Lidl Trek, you and I, throughout these previews.
Yeah, I think with Lidl Trek are one of the big contenders for this race. I think Skelmoser makes a lot of sense, but also Tom Schoens is, you know, he didn't do Roubaix because he wants, because he's, you know, he's, you know, you did an interview with him, he was saying how he's preparing for the Ardennes, and I think that he is a perfect candidate to be sending it quite long and maybe be a little bit under the radar and gets like a 30 second to a minute gap just kind of inconspicuously. So I think that Schoens is a really interesting option here as well. Like you say, Mollema, Bagioli, Quinn Simmons, they have like 8 riders on the list right now, but we're only allowed 7. But yeah, Skelmoser probably being the main man, almost winning Basque Country. He's been in just fantastic form this year, hasn't he? And I honestly think that Skelmoser is a big contender for this race. No, he probably won't be winning from a sprint, but you know, if he gets up a front in a small group, he just gets so aero and so low that he's, I think he's a real threat to be, you know, probably going better than his result last year. I think that Skelmoser has taken a real step up this year. And I think that Lidl Trek have a real strong team around him. And I think the combination of him and Schoens will be a really deadly combination within the final 50 kilometers.
But I mean, Patrick, Lidl Trek, who else can we talk about? I mean, as a Yorkshireman, you will be looking towards the guy who was on the podium last year, Tom Pidcock. His first ever Roubaix last weekend, so he came through that. And I mean, Ineos Grenadiers and this race have been quite well. They won it once, I think, with Kwiatkowski. But how do you see Ineos Grenadiers and what kind of strategy should they play to try and get maximum result out of this?
Well, at the time I recorded, we've only got Kwiatkowski and Pidcock on my star list. So
they're only sending 2 riders.
I mean, yeah, but they'll probably just send, you know, a decent supporting cast. But I think, yeah, Pidcock's a weird one because he had that crash in the recon of Basque Country, but then came back to do Roubaix, you know, less than a week later. So he's clearly must be feeling fine. Those injuries can't be hindering him too much if he's going across the cobbles of Roubaix. So I think that Pidcock can't be underestimated here, but you know, the fact that he came 3rd last year, kind of beaten by Ben Healy, dropped pretty fair and square. I don't know, it's hard to tell. I think that he's not been absolutely kind of firing on all cylinders so far this year. I don't think any of his results are particularly amazing, but I think that this is a race where people can really pull it out of the bag and do really good just out of nowhere. I mean, just think to, I mean, his teammate here, Kwiatkowski, literally won it a few years ago, seemingly out of nowhere. So sometimes previous results going into this race don't mean anything. You can just come out of nowhere and just start to do really well. So I don't think Pidcock can be written off as somebody who finished on the podium, well, he's finished on the podium twice. He almost beat Wout van Aert, although that's obviously still up for debate for forever. Yeah, exactly. Well, he's, you know, he's finished podium twice, so he obviously knows how to do this race. He's obviously pretty good at this race, so I think that Pidcock can't be written off.
He's always like an enigma.
Pidcock. He's like a class of his own, but when he's good, he's like amazing. Fourth in Strada this year, defending that title. Obviously, it was a long addition. What impressed me was his Tirreno, where he was up there on the mountain stage, only a few seconds, well, a handful of seconds behind Jonas Vingegaard on one of their tested climbs. But then, like you said, the crash at the Tour of Basque Country with the quite alarming photos of him getting carried out of the bus throws like a question mark as well. We haven't even spoken about him. Two-time winner, Kwiatkowski, like you said. Could he not be up here again?
Based upon the fact that he seems to do quite well at this race, I don't think, he could do something. He's been in the moves of like in the last few races, especially at Basque Country. So, yeah, you know, the veteran, my favourite rider. I don't see any reason why Kwiatkowski couldn't do something, you know. Stranger things have happened in the past.
Last year, he was 72nd, so...
But then he won a few years ago, so you just never know.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't know he was your favourite rider.
Yeah, Kwiatkowski. It's great.
You learn something new every day. But in terms of, well, Ineos Grid is the team that has superseded them in terms of the mantle of being the big juggernauts of Grand Tour racing. Visma Lisa bike, whom I don't think they were sending Wout van Aert here, to be honest, and they were definitely not sending Jonas Vingegaard. So even those two crashes wouldn't have really changed who was going to go there. But as of recording, the riders that we can see, Thijs Benoot, who, well, fits this profile quite well, punchy rider. Wilco Kelderman, Dylan Baal, obviously both Dutch riders. Dylan Baal, you said, had some problems in the recap for Paris-Roubaix. And then Mathieu Jurgensen, who's been flying the flag quite high for Visma Lisabike in the early part of the season with his Paris-Nice victory and also winning at the Amstel Vlaanderen. Is this interesting? It's his first Amstel Gold as well.
Yeah, it's a decent team. It's just, it's quite hard to tell. This team's had, obviously, a lot of hard time recently. I think that Jorgensen makes the most sense on this team. Van Baal didn't even start Roubaix because of some sort of, I don't know, I don't even know what problem it was, but he didn't start for some sort of medical issue or whatever. Benoot, I think, actually makes quite a lot of sense. He's done very well in this race. He finished actually on the podium only 2 years ago in 2022, behind Kwiatkowski and Kuznetsov. So Benoot's definitely not to be slept on either. I don't know. Things haven't been going their way, let's face it, for poor Visma Lisabike. Kelderman, I mean, people would all love to see Kelderman get a win, but it's definitely going to have to be a solo kind of break. I'd expect that Jorgensen's going to be their main man for this race with Benoot, and everyone else is sort of playing a support role. And I think that Visma Lisabike could be looking for some kind of good fortune given their recent run of just really bad luck, very unfortunately for them. So fingers crossed to get something decent out of this.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see if they can do anything. But certainly a skeleton team in some respects. Well, that's a bit harsh. No, I think we've seen this a lot where they kind of just throw, they don't really have like one of the big juggernauts and they just throw like more junior riders and then they just see what they can get out of it. So maybe they can be there in a top five or fighting for a podium. But yeah, this is going to be the first time this year in one of our previous shows we've included a Pro Continental team in the favorite section. But Israel Premier Tech, both you and I think they have quite an interesting lineup and could be there. You were saying in the early prediction back in January that you thought Stephen Williams was going to do something in Liège. But at Amstel, he's down for the start list.
Yeah, he is. And he's also down for Brabant-Séville, which is going to be happening while this is recording before then. So we don't know the result of that. So hopefully he stays upright, because we're about to probably heap a lot of praise onto him. But yeah, Mike Woods, Dylan Terns, Stephen Williams, Simon Clark, Jakob Fuglsang, Chris Nalens, and Corbin Strong. Really strong team. For me, I'm seeing Stephen Williams and Dylan Terns as being these attacking options. We saw Terns, actually. I mean, him and Bettiol almost were, you know, on the podium of Flandern. So let's not forget. His result there does not reflect his ability at the moment. I think that Terns is, you know, building into something really, really strong at the moment. Obviously, he's a winner of the Flesh Malone, so this is his time of year. So I think that Terns and Williams make a really good attacking option. And then you've got like Corbin Strong as a sprinting option. He's kind of a bit like Michael Matthews, I see it. So I think that they've got a real strong team here, and I'm looking forward to seeing especially what Stephen Williams can do. You know, he's really turned into a fantastic rider, I think, over the last kind of like even just like a year or so. You know, he's just been kind of gone from strength to strength, and I think that this could really be a bit of a, I think that he could almost be like the 2024 version of Ben Healy last year. That's how I see him being, and so I'm really excited to see what he can do.
The last favorite I want to focus on, okay, he hasn't finished on the podium since 2015, but that is Michael Matthews. Obviously, he finished second in Milan-San Remo and finished on the podium in Tour of Flanders before getting relegated to 11th. So, certainly has the form, and one of your favorite riders as well, part of the team, Mauro Schmidt. He's got the capability of Michael Matthews being like this hardy sprinter who can roll with the hills and then is able to finish it off. He's probably one of the guys who loved the change of not having the Kalberg at the top.
Yeah, I think that Matthews has got a really good chance of getting a good result in this race. I just don't think that his team is that great. Schmid has been, you know, despite the fact that, yes, he is one of my favorite riders, he's still building by the looks of things. Basque Country, he was just in the break and he wasn't like brilliant, but he's all right. But yeah, like Jan Maas, Lawson Craddock, Luke Durbridge, Felix Engelhardt, and Anders Fordago. Who's going to be there in the last 50k to try and stitch things together for a Michael Matthews sprint is my point. Because that's what he's going to want. He's going to want it to be a sprint, and I'm not sure who's going to be there. So therefore, he's just reliant upon the race kind of panning out in his way. He's got to follow the wheels and hopefully sprint for a decent position. So I really like Matthews, but I think that he would benefit from a stronger team here, having more riders around him in the last hour of racing to try and stitch things together, especially in a race which is, you know, usually goes to attackers going off the front. You really need to try and have more riders there to keep things together, but you can live in hope. If he follows the right wheels, maybe he can crack a podium on a really good day.
But nevertheless, we might just welcome to the outsiders, and I mean, Patrick, I'll go first with a few names to mention, and then you can throw the ones you want in here. I'm not going to say anything about FDJ because I think you will say something. Bahrain, Matej Moric, I'm tired of mentioning him in these preview shows, and then he didn't do anything. I mean, he did fine in Milan-San Remo, but the other races are not so great. Uno X with our all-Norwegian outfit here. Leknessen in there. Odd, Christian Eiking, Tobias Haller-Johannessen, probably some guys who could do something here. DSM with Warren Barguil. That'd be quite interesting. And Vess Korn for Lotto Destiny. Alexander Kamp, who in 2022 finished fifth. But nevertheless, I mean, Patrick, who do you kind of, well, out of outsiders, so this is more like from 5 to 6 to 10, maybe.
I mean, Romain Grégoire, be criminal not to mention him. He's, of course, won a stage of Basque Country recently. You know, his top 10 in Slade last year in 2023. I think that he's a sensational talent. Rumours of him moving away next year, but I think that he is the sort of rider who really suits this race, so I think he's certainly one to be keeping an eye on. Yeah, Aramburu, I think, for Movistar, an interesting one. He won the points classification at Basque Country, so he's clearly looking at some decent form. So I think that Aramburu is certainly one to be looking out for. Yeah, and then other than them, maybe, yeah, like Van Hills of Lotto Destiny. I think that he's been in really good form this year, so definitely watch out for him, considering that he was on the podium at Stladi, so very suited to this sort of terrain. And then, of course, got to give a shout out to my boy Francesco Passato of Intermarché. Bit of a long shot, of course, but you know, whenever he's on the star list, I've got to give him a shout out. Winner of Liège-Bastogne-Liège under 23, obviously, in the past couple of years. So I think that he could definitely be a bit of an outsider maybe not a top 10, but like a top 20, I think would be really good.
Well, with that out of the way, now comes your favorite part of the show, and you got it correct last week, predicting Mathieu van der Poel winning. And are you going to pick him for this one as well?
Well, I thought you were going to go first.
Oh, I can go first. Mathieu van der Poel is going to win. You took him away from me last time. Okay, I'm going to say Machimanipal wins, Skillmore's the second, and in third place, Kwana Yuzo.
Oh, fair enough. I'm going to go with, I think third place is arguably my hot bubble, which I'm struggling with the most. Third place, I'm going to say, will be Benoit Cousinofois. Second place will be, well, you took him away.
Uh-huh.
Second place will be Matthew Van Der Poel. And first place will be Mathias Skelmos Jensen.
I think
Skelmos could honestly solo. Van Der Poel attacks from behind. He's like, it's going to be the most entertaining last 10K of your life. Because Van Der Poel's going to be like hunting him down. And then Cousinofois might just be sat on Van Der Poel and just can't come around.
I would sign up for that edition. That sounds very enthralling. But yeah, that's basically it for this preview show. Make sure to hit the like button, subscribe to the channel here, and check us out on Spotify if you haven't already. And as well, if you want to see more Patrick, check out Audio Cycling, where he'll do the Velo Games preview for not only this, but also Brabantse Pijl and all the other races. And if you want to see more of him, why not check out the Echelon Cycling podcast, where this week we talked about why some fans hate Mathieu Van Der Poel. So with that, thank you very much for watching, and we will see you around.